thinking.
Philip's interest in research.
Well, should we take a break and have a cup
no,
of tea?
No, right.
I think I'd quite like it. Right. So where were we when we started that? Where he was applying for research money.
No, it went before it, I think we were talking about. No, I think, you see, Philip was uneasy in a way all his academic life about the possibility of simply being another version of me. For example, when he first got his chair at Durham, went up there, and almost immediately the word went round the social sciences department, oh God, now we're going to have to do surveys, we're going to have to learn about political sociology, and so on, now that he's come, the assumption and accusation being, you know, that he would have exactly the same interests and approaches that I had. And he was aware of that, and I think he almost went out of his way to avoid any contact with surveys of the normal kind, the usual traditional kind, and went out of his way to follow up his own real interest in political sociology. I mean, his first published work on Locke was really a study in political sociology, in a sense, to show that here was a man who could talk the language of radicalism, but at the same time be through and through conservative. And somehow they were compatible in the same philosopher. So his interest in political sociology, he sacrificed in a way, because of his unwillingness, his fear of being confused in some way with me and being influenced by me. And that went on, I think, on many occasions. For example, I'd gone to America for a time and been very impressed with the Detroit area study, which I think is one of the major inventions of the academic world, as far as the social sciences is concerned, of taking an area and year after year after year studying it, but each year giving a member of the social sciences faculty, a senior member, an opportunity to say, well, this year we will study the particular aspect of the Detroit area that impinges most closely on my work and my interests. In return, I will take the postgraduate students who want to join the Detroit area study. They will be apprentices, if you like, but they will also be colleagues, in the sense that when the study is finished, any of the material they want to use for their own publications, they will publish over their own names. And I was greatly impressed with this, partly because it threw a great deal of sociological light on how a community develops, changes, and the tensions it had, and also partly because it produced, year after year, new young people who had learned how you use empirical research in developing social theory, and I thought this was wonderful. So I came back to England and told the Social Science Research Council about it, how good it was, and they were sufficiently impressed to say, fine, draw up a memorandum indicating what such a scheme is and how it could work in this country, and we will send out an invitation to all 45 universities in the country asking them to put in applications for funds to set up a similar program here. But it will be a program, not a project.
Mm.
The funds will be guaranteed to begin with for 5 years. So I did this, and the thing was sent out. We got 11 applications back. Majority of them were pretty bad. Four of them were shortlisted, and included among the four was the one from Durham University, which had been written by Philip. I thought it was absolutely first rate. It understood completely what the Detroit area could do as a postgraduate training tool, what lights it had thrown on the American social scene, and what the people who had worked on it as graduate students had subsequently done, how good it was. Now, I was not alone in feeling it was first rate. Everyone on the council who was concerned with the project felt exactly the same way. Now, unfortunately in a sense, Philip not only wrote that project, that proposal, but when it came to presenting it to the council and arguing for it, Durham University picked Philip to do it. That meant he had to sit one side of the table with me the other side of the table, and me being flanked by people I was going to live with for the next few years anyway. And I imagine Philip thought, oh God, if the thing is given to Durham now, everyone will say, well, it's because Mark was there and intimidated the others. That was absolute nonsense. Even if I voted against Durham, it would have been given to Durham because it was so good. But when... But when it was given to Durham, Philip ostentatiously disassociated himself from the project. He watched it being handed over to the geography department. When the geography department made a mess of it, I think it made a mess of it. Professor Angus Campbell and I went up to look at it, monitor it, talk to the people on the course. We were very unhappy, and we both said to Philip, why don't you take a greater interest in it? Philip said no. He did not want anyone for a moment to believe, think, suggest, hint that he had got this because he was connected with me. And he leant over backwards time and time again, I think, make clear that he was Philip and that I was Mark. And I can understand that.
Ah!
Cake. Very nice. Thank you, Dean. You've just got some tea, thanks. Yeah.
And this meant that, in a way, Philip neglected some areas of sociology which I knew he was interested in. And for example, his interest in political sociology was very real and very important to him. His very early studies of the young liberals, the young socialists, the young conservatives was something that excited him. He wanted to publish very much. But no, he felt that would be running the risk of
it too close. But surely his work on neighbouring is getting actually in some ways quite close to what you've been doing. I mean, obviously it's a different theoretical position, but in sort of methodological terms and some of the real interest behind it. Must have been quite similar.
No, it's very, very interesting that although neighbouring in practice is very largely a matter of support and care for the elderly, Philip, from time to time in his writings, makes clear that there are other segments of the population who are important in community care. The young, the single parent, and so on, the homeless, and so on. But it's wider than just the elderly. Again, in terms of methodology, the bulk of his support material, other than his own thinking, is in the terms of vignettes, long quotes of people on what they mean by neighborliness or what they mean by neighboring. Whereas I think my temptation all the time would have been to say, here are three possible definitions of neighboring, which is most important, which is least important, and then at the end said 93% said this and 20% said that.
Do you think that was a matter of presentation though? I mean, I don't know, my recollections of seeing the questionnaires and things and the interview schedules being coded, was that kind of hard empirical quantitative data was often there, but he chose not to present it.
He left it to other people to present it. Yes, and to work on it and to present it, yes. Whereas that's the first thing I would have asked for. Where are the tabs?
Yeah. Why do you think he got involved in such, applied questions, given that his interests were very largely theoretical?
Well, in fact, he'd long ago mentioned to me that he would like to move into the field of policy research. I was not very encouraging, I suppose, because I said, well, you know, the only thing that convinces some of the policy makers is when you produce great tabulations of people who want this or want that, or showing how many of them have houses with no lavatories in, or no central heating. That's the sort of thing that gets the headlines and influences policy makers. You realize that when you say you're going in for policy research. And he said, well, yes, I suppose so. But the interesting thing is that almost the last thing he did, see, was to accept this post at the Policy Institute, Policy Studies Institute, where he would, whether he liked it or not, would have had to relate quantitative empirical material of this kind to recommendations about policy or implications for policy making. So there might well eventually, as he grew older, have been some reconciliation within himself of this feeling that figures were mucky, useless stuff.
I think it's quite interesting in a way. Maybe he gave that impression more strongly to you than he did to me. Because perhaps he felt, I don't know, I mean, because he would often discuss with me what was the use of doing experiments, for example.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the same one. You know, we can't really learn very much from them. And I would argue back, but on the other hand, you have to try and test theory in very controlled conditions. He would agree with that, and we'd reach this kind
he
of
he would agree with that.
He would. So we'd reach an impasse in which he would, he'd be accepting the need for data, if you like, but on the other hand, be resisting possibility that you'd have any objective data. So I mean, I think he was, to me anyway, he presented a recognition of both things as being important, and maybe with you he was resisting a bit more strongly.
Yes, I think that's right. Yes. In fact, he didn't often discuss his work with me at all. Mm.
No, he didn't with me about it.
I don't think he did with anyone much.